closer to it.
I went to graduate school when I was probably, I don't know, 35, maybe 5 years. And I met a man who was a little costly. And I decided the very first day of class, I went into this lady's class and it was on education policy. And she asked us, if we were to change the educational system, what would we do? And I thought, boy, here's a question. If I want to just make her happy, and I've read some of her papers, I knew how she thought, then I know exactly what I could write. Or I could write what I really believe and am passionate about and see what she has to say about it. And see if this is going to be a great experience in graduate school or if I'm just going to be held to what the teachers expect me so that I graduate with a degree. And it was the most amazing experience at Florida State. None of my professors agreed with me, and all of them gave me excellent feedback and were really respectful about my opinions and what I believe. And I was big into school choice at the time. I worked for the Florida Department of Education as a charter school director. And we were in the seminar class, which was only about 7 of us. And there'd be a nice discussion going on, and then the professor would look over at me and say, okay, Steve, what's the school choice answer? Because there's always a choice answer, right? I don't know if school choice is the right answer, but there's always a choice answer. If you give people choices, you have better answers. That's just how it works. So I guess I should talk about the stuff I put down on the thing that I talk about. But I just want you to know, any questions you have, anything you want to discuss when I'm done with my little bit, feel free to ask and we'll just talk. But I'm a real advocate for the concept of natural rights. And we don't talk about it a lot anymore. And I think there is a huge difference between civil rights and natural rights. So I'm going to be a little interactive here. So I just want to ask you, what's a civil right? Yeah.
Driving
is a civil right. That's an interesting one. I think
to vote
would be considered a civil right. And I think driving too is, they call it a privilege now, which is a pretty good definition for a civil right, is a government granted privilege. But who else would shape what is a civil right? We had a big push for civil rights, which in some ways you can qualify as equality under the law. I saw you look like you were ready to say something. What's that? The right to assemble is a civil right. The right to free speech is a civil right. The right to keep and bear arms is a civil right. So why would I have a problem with civil rights if those are civil rights? What's a natural right? Let's go that direction. Let's compare them a little bit.
Access to water. Life?
Yes.
I might be thinking about this wrong.
No, that's actually it is. There's different ways to define a natural right. I'm a big John Locke fan. If you guys haven't got your kids reading John Locke, if you're not reading John Locke, please read a couple of his things at least. Brilliant focal point in history, a tipping point between the kings and the Enlightenment. Just a phenomenal human being. I was down as a guest of a charter school system down in California. And I got on my soapbox about John Locke, not realizing that he is not well received by the Catholic community. And half of this charter school were Catholic families, and they just didn't talk about John Locke at the school. I had a great time, because I've talked about John Locke a couple of times. And I love that conversation that it brings up with Catholicism, too. It's fantastic. So a natural right is something easily observed in nature. And when you hear the phrase that we got our liberties or our rights from nature or nature's God, that's how the philosophers of the time would describe a natural right. You can be a religionist and say that I get these rights from God, or you can be a naturalist and say I observe these things in nature. All creatures have this right, so do I. One of its easiest is the right of self-defense. The right of self-defense was not a right held by people in Europe. Under the feudal system of the kings and the divine rights of kings and the church, you did not have the right of self-defense unless it was granted as a civil right, as a right for the king, because he held all the rights. And so coming out of the Enlightenment with John Locke, one of these recognized natural rights was the right of self-defense. And they said, you can see it in nature. Right? Have you ever tried to kick a badger? They will defend themselves. Have you ever tried to pick up an earthworm? Have anybody gone out got your own worms for fishing? And you think, well, it's going to be easy. You see it on the ground. Okay. You go to pick it up, what does it do? It jumps right in its hole. And you're like, well, that was nice. Well, he has a natural right of self-defense, as all creatures do, even us. And so that's a natural right. Now, it's an easy argument. Well, this is still too early. I hear myself echoing in my head, and I'm already loud and annoying as it is to begin with. So the argument that came out, I'm going to go to John Locke here for a minute. So he's living under the divine right of kings. That was the prevailing political philosophy. Basically said that God told Adam, I give you dominion over all things and all things therein. And that was the rights of the king. And they had this really convoluted philosophical argument that said the church now possesses this right, and they crown a king, and they anoint the king, and he has all the rights and authorities of Adam. And John Locke and other people started studying this, and they're like, that's just utter nonsense. And so at the time, governments were not kind to dissenters. Right? If you want to get killed as a traitor, better the king take care of that than the church. Because the church goes full Braveheart on you. I mean, it's terrible the way they killed him. But the king will just either chop your head off or let you starve to death. Pretty gentle ways to go out of the world. So if John Locke actually writes a book about how the divine rights of kings is utter nonsense, he's going to die that way. So he has two things that are worrying him. One is, he knows he can destroy the foundations of government in Europe by just publishing what he has studied in the Bible. But that's a problem, right? Because you get away from anarchy or from tyranny and you get towards anarchy and things get rough. So he waited and wrote a second treatise on civil government. Who's heard of John Locke's second treatise? Come on, homeschool crowd. You gotta save me here. Oh, one? And you're a student, probably. Well, you got babies, so I know you're a mom too. You're young. Okay, now I feel bad. You guys gotta study some John Locke. But, so it doesn't make sense. Now I can give this talk and it'll be new information for you. So John Locke sits down and he writes the first treatise on civil government. He writes the second treatise on civil government. He flees the country and has it published while he's living in the Netherlands. And a little side note, I did philosophy of education in college in my graduate program. The second book they had me read in my intro to philosophy of education as a graduate student was John Locke on education. John Locke never wrote a book on education. So you might ask yourself, why are you reading John Locke's book on education? Because he was so revered after his second treatise on civil government that they collected his letters to his son's tutor, instructing him how to educate his son. So as a homeschool parent, you would be fascinated. And just as a human being, I thought it was hilarious. I like John Locke for this reason, better than his political philosophy. One of these letters he wrote back, and he said, I do not want my son to grow up soft. I want him to bathe in the creek, in the frozen creek, every morning, and eat hard-crusted black bread for breakfast. And he was a medical doctor, probably more bleach with leeches and stuff. But what do we do nowadays? What's like the big health craze with icy water?
Cold plunging.
He was teaching his son cold plunging back in the 1600s to make him tough. I thought that's fantastic. So anyway, John Locke was hugely popular in England. We're going to come back to that in a second. But at this point, he's just a medical doctor with a moral obligation to share what he's learned about the divine rights of kings. So in his first treatise, which nobody cares about anymore, he writes an argument to destroying the Divine Right of Kings. Just, I mean, it was obnoxiously overpowering to the point where it never even got raised in the end. It was, he just destroyed them. Then he published the second treatise, which is, now that I've destroyed all of the foundations of government for Europe, here's what we should be doing. And that is the gift he gave us, because our founders quoted him second only to the Bible. And as you read, in fact, I got an argument with one of the AIs. What's the one everybody likes? ChatGPT. There's an LDS church version that's isolated from everything else. And they gave me rights to it at one of our conferences. They wanted us to play with it to start building it. And so I got on there and I said, give me a compare and contrast between John Locke's Second Treatise and the Declaration of Independence. And it, so annoying, started asking me questions instead of answering my question. And so I answered. I said, well, in the Second Treatise, he talks about, he builds on his argument that there is no divine right of kings, that things are based on natural rights. And then he goes through the separation of powers and checks and balances. And it disagrees with me. And it says, well, really it's about the natural rights and the social contract. Who's heard of the social contract thing? John Locke never mentioned, he never says the word social contract. But all the later, stupider philosophers that aren't as smart as John Locke didn't understand what he was saying, so they rebranded it as a social contract, which he never even talked about. Anyway, I get real annoyed with people who are less intelligent than the person they're studying, and then decide they're going to tell you what that's. So, anyway, it starts telling me about this garbage about John Locke. And then I say, look, I just want you to compare his phrasing about natural rights and the Declaration of Independence. And ask me another question. And I wrote back, that's what I'm asking you. And I have that right in the bottom clock. No. AI isn't quite there yet to really help us out. Well, it is helping in some ways. If you want to know about that, I'll tell you some. The ways BYU Bible is using it for worldwide education. There's some cool stuff happening. But what John Locke really came down to was he's saying, look, God gave every human being all of his rights, God's rights. And it says that several times in the Bible. That's how he totally destroyed the divine right of kings. And he says, look, we have the rights, not the king. So the people have to delegate their rights to government. And here's the kicker that created the United States of America. If the people you delegate your rights to become tyrants, meaning they take more authority than they were given, they start exercising unrighteous or unauthorized power, then you have not only the right, but the responsibility to overthrow them and create your own government. And he puts a lot of weight on the legislative branch. And he looks at all of us as legislators. And he's like, you don't dissolve the legislation, the legislature, because that's us. You dissolve the other stuff, mainly the executive. He didn't have a lot of good to say about the executive, because he was coming at kings. So, really interesting stuff, but he puts all this emphasis on these natural rights. I teach a lot of gun classes, so I talk about two really big natural rights. One is his big one, is property. And actually one of his other big ones, it's a little lesser in his writing, is the right of self-defense. You combine the right of self-defense with the right of property, and what do you get? What property allows us to defend ourselves? Come on, folks, what's that? Three ladies especially. You think we can get in a fist fight and they'll come out on top? Well, now I'm getting all the fat. What? Guns! The right to keep and bear arms came out of the Glorious Revolution. Back after John, right at John Locke, when he was in his height. In fact, it's the only revolution I know of in Europe where nobody died. All the nobles got together and said, this John Locke dude's right. Throw the Catholic Church out. And they got a new king. They found the daughter of the one who they didn't like and made her and her husband king and queen. And passed, what did I do that pulled up? It's like the British Bill of Rights, basically. It comes out of the 1600s. And they talk about these natural rights. And they made the king agree to these as a limited power of executive. And what that the whole legal doctrine of the right to keep and bear arms comes out of that. We think we invented it here in America. took on steroids. We just said, not only do you have the right, you have the responsibility under law to buy your own gun and to train with it and drill, and you are the military. Good luck. And we took that idea and we're like, that's the way to live. And now we debate it all the time as we go over and over. But back to other stuff. I like the Second Amendment stuff. That gets me going. But all of these natural rights, the whole foundation is government does not give, nor do they permit your rights. They protect your rights, or they are a tyranny. They have gone beyond their legal scope of authority. Now, how do we argue about civil rights? Oh, to get a civil right, we have to go, we have to argue, and we have to back and forth and get 50% vote, and then we have to go and let the courts agree on it, and then we have to go back and make sure the executive agrees and he's going to enforce it the right way, and then keep your eye on the courts so that the courts will keep making judgments the way they're supposed to. And that's a civil right, because the civil rights come from the government. Very similar to the system we have under the rule of kings, which was the king tells you what rights you get to have, and those are the rights you have under the law. I remember watching an old movie, and there was this guy being knighted, and they're doing the whole knighting ceremony, and they say, we bestow upon you, and they're like rattling things off, and one of them was the right of self-defense. That was a civil right for a knight, but not for a commoner. And John Locke looks at that, and he says, none of us are common under God. We are his heirs, and as such, we have his rights. And he's real controversial, because he said women did too, and that kind of set things up for lots of argument. But he was great. He was the weirdest looking dude. If you find pictures of John Locke, he looks like Ichabod Crane from the old Headless Horseman videos. I swear they wrote that character after John Locke. Great stuff. Good old stuff. Great homeschool stuff. I was helping the Foundations of Education professor at BYU-Idaho put his course online. And it's kind of a departmentally shared course, so he didn't want to fiddle with it too much. And we're getting into his outline for this course, and I'm like, where do you talk about the second treatise? And he's like, oh, that's too hard for college students. I had my seventh graders reading the second treatise. What are you talking about? It was, oh. So he let me put in like this audio recording of a really smart professor talking about the second treatise. And that's as a alternate study. I don't even know how you can even talk about the Declaration of Independence without covering the entire second treatise. Because that sets the foundation for the Declaration of Independence. And when Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration, he purposefully used the arguments and wording of John Locke, because the British citizens loved him. And he knew, or didn't know, but he was calculating that if he could use their own beloved statesmen against them, he might gain some favor. And he did. There were some folks that were legislators in House of Lords that actually argued on our behalf because of the writings and teachings of John Locke. So, anyway, I'm not going to go too much into that. It's pretty self-explanatory when you start thinking about where do our rights come from. But then you start talking about the troublesome truth about freedom is that it's not pretty and it's not simple and it's rarely peaceful. And so you have to have a lot of internal conversations about what that means and what you're willing to do to support it or what you shouldn't do. Because I remember reading the Book of Mormon and just thinking that the only rule I could find about freedom, fighting for freedom, so I was going into the Marine Corps, so I read it, thinking about how does this apply to me as a warrior? What am I being taught? And the only thing I could gain for sure out of it was when the Lord tells you to fight, you fight. And when he tells you not to, you don't. Well, that's tough. That's a lot harder than just fighting all the time. I get a kick out of that. Anyway, tough stuff. But teach your kids. They need to know this stuff. Teach yourself first, by far. That's the most important thing to do. And then don't get caught up in the modern false dichotomies of this against that. It's ridiculous. Guess who claims John Locke as their founding philosopher? Democrats, socialists, Republicans, conservatives, they all claim to be Lockeans. And I've had many an argument with liberal professors about John Locke. And they're like, he's the reason I'm a socialist. I'm like, oh my gosh, you gotta read it again, because that's not what he's talking about. His big thing was property. And the foundation of capitalism comes out of that. And this idea that property is a natural right. If you find a piece of land and you cultivate that land, you tear up the weeds, you take your spade, turn it over, plant some seeds, and those seeds grow, that growth is your property. It is the product of your labor. So here's where the socialists and the communists join the party. Because your labor is your property. And somebody who exploits your labor is your enemy. That's the communist, the socialist. They always have to have an enemy. There's got to be an oppressor and oppressed. And you don't want to tell anybody they're the oppressor, so you tell everybody they're the oppressed. And that gives you power. But that's not what he was talking about. He was talking about what we choose to do is our own decision. And if we choose to build something, that what we build is ours. Now, we can also contract to build for someone else. This is where the whole capitalism argument comes in, where you're not taking the risk, you're selling your labor for a negotiated fair wage. I think I'm slowly getting closer to the speaker or something. I just don't like standing so far back and projecting. But this idea that we control ourselves. We need to take ownership of ourselves. I'll just wait. And that's what a natural right is. But you can't take, so here's another problem with civil rights. You can start making new civil rights that didn't exist. And you can become like a special favored status. Instead of having equality under the natural law, which is what Locke argued for, which was the foundation for our legal system, you start arguing about who gets to do this and who doesn't. Well, I'm this category, male, female, different races, different political groups, different hierarchies. Well, I'm up here, that law doesn't have, this shouldn't apply to me. There's a lot of that going on in our society. Okay, any questions on a natural right, civil right? That's what I said I'm talking about. Yeah, go ahead and talk about it.
So natural rights, are those like what you would say we have in this country?
What we're supposed to have. And under God, we have them regardless of whether government recognizes them. This is where it gets touchy, right? It's where you start arguing for revolution and standing up for yourself and all that good stuff. So the concept of a natural right is we have it whether government says we do or not. And it just exists. Now, a civil right is what government tells you you have.
So what about like how you said like cultivating property? Like if you get, you go pick a piece of land and you work it and it becomes yours. If that's a natural right, that's not a part of our, like we're not allowed to do that. So wouldn't that be a civil right?
We were, which is another argument against all the federal ownership of land, because people are saying, look, we can no longer go get land. But the land rushes that went on where they said, hey, we're opening up this land, you just have to check in, get your flag, go plant it. And then there were requirements. Like my great-grandfather, when he helped to found Riverside, 3 miles up the road, he was given, I think, 50 acres under a Homestead Act, and he had to improve it. So he had to show improvement, and they had, this is a federal civil, I don't know, can I use halfway bad words? I still have a lot of marine in me that leaks out. So they kind of bastardized that concept of natural right, and they said, in order to give it some structure and keep people from killing each other, we're going to tell you how to do this. And if you plant like 5 acres of trees, and after a year these trees are alive and you've made this place better because it's all sagebrush and lava rock, then you own that 50 acres. So that's a concept of that. Look, and John Locke said this because he was in England, all the land was claimed. But he kept using the Americans as an analogy. He's like, look, in England, we've all taken ownership of the land. But now we have industry we can take ownership of. We can get a decree, and then that, or a sword, and then you trade that for a bushel of corn, or 10, 20 bushels. Way more expensive than they are now. But But yeah, it's a good question. It's something to think about as you read it, because he takes them back in their own history and then brings them to where they are now. And says, see how that works and how it ends up in money. In fact, I brought an example.
Oh, mine is similar to her, just what is natural rights exactly? And are you saying we want natural rights? Is that?
I'm saying we have them whether we want them or not.
Yeah.
And here's a political argument. Our systems were built on that concept, not civil rights. Civil rights were a bastardization of natural rights that have allowed, I'll give you an example, I brought one for you. Has anybody been watching Silver?
Yeah.
So pass this around. Yeah, I don't have gold. I wouldn't be passing around gold right now. I checked today though, but it's my object lesson has lost its luster. It's gone down 30% today. But did it really go down? I mean, that's a whole other argument. But silver was worth, when I bought these, $16.50 an ounce. That was about 10 years ago. Well, a little longer. And I thought, you know, when the zombies all come and the communists are fighting the zombies, I'll have something to trade for potatoes. And so I bought these. And then I watched what happened with them over time. So what happened during COVID? How much new money did we print as a nation? Conservative estimates are about 30 to 40% of our entire money supply was created anew. And my son, I was trying to tell this to my older son, and I was explaining what printing new money does to our values. And he said, well, basically, Dad, what they've done is they've taken a pizza and it's cut in 8 pieces. And they tell you, yeah, you get to have 4 of those pieces, but let me cut them all in half first. And you still have 4 pieces. They're just smaller than the ones you had before. So when they print new money, this is built on a civil right, by the way. The difference between natural, what's a natural right currency? What was our nation, what money system did we use when we were created under natural rights? Gold and silver. What are we under now? It's called fiat currency, which the only value that money has is the promise to give some value for it. And in debt, it's the promise of our entire nation to capitalize that debt. So we have to provide the value to that money as people. And in some countries, when you have a national bank, if your nation needs more capital, they will print currency with the promise that their people will use that money, build industry, and that will capitalize this fiat currency. Well, guess what smart thing we did? We decided, because of a fake, bastardized system of capitalism, that we would make our national bank private. So private banks would print the new money, lend it to the government, and the government would capitalize it by paying it back and interest. So when I take my pizza in, they cut up all the pieces and they take half of it, and that's how they make money with my pizza. And then my government pays them back the pizza with interest that they never owned to begin with. They are creating money out of thin air that we give value to through taxation and our requirement to pay it back. And by the way, if this is new news to you, you realize how screwed up we are and how we teach and share information to each other. It is probably the worst fiat system in the world, because we, the people, don't even own it. It's owned by private, and what a deal, what a way to do slavery, right? I'm gonna own your labor, as much of it as I wanna take, and you won't know it, and as long as we keep you in McDonald's and streaming videos, you'll be okay with it.
Well, that is that like the same concept of like taxing the same dollar over and over again?
No. It's the concept of creating a new dollar, lending it to you, and you have to pay them back the value, which they never had to begin with, and interest. And that is where debt becomes pure, real slavery. And then those of us that aren't in debt, so I made this argument. So in Rexburg, and I'm the mayor of Sugar City, and these are like these little Mormondom towns, where everybody smiles at each other and we're all holier than everybody else. And we all know it. We walk around being all excited about how holy we are. And we have these little meetings and we get together and we pat each other on the back and talk about how holy we are. It is a den of villainy in Rexburg. Worse than Florida. And I'm in government there and I'm like, we are being robbed blind. And so, not wanting to be a total insurrectionist, I give my State of the Mayor speech with the Rexburg Mayor and they have a county commissioner that gives it to. It's at BYU Idaho. And the theme was, what is your city dealing with? And it was right after COVID. I mean, you know what we're dealing with? Retired people who just had 35% of their future retirement stolen from them by the federal banks. That's what we're dealing with. And they're all looking at me like, well, that's not happy. Why aren't you in the happy face? Why aren't you walking around being happy? And I'm like, because I'm not happy. This is ridiculous. We are slaves and nobody will even say it. And it's ridiculous. So what happened to silver in that time frame? It was really weird. Just COVID to after COVID, silver didn't change price. And I'm like, this is not reflecting what's going on. And then all of a sudden, it was about 3 or 4 months ago, and it went, which actually, you don't have to believe me because it sounds like a total fabrication right now. I was looking at $100 silver yesterday, and I'm like, should be about $70, $75. I wake up this morning, let me tell you what the silver's worth, $75. Oh, and it's come up 2%, so it's only 28% loss on it. But really, the value of it as a commodity, there was a lot of nations pulling in silver and gold, and the price went up even higher than it should have been, I think. And I think if you look at inflation, when before COVID, it was worth about $24, and now it's probably worth $70. And I think that's the real cost of the money we printed. It more than doubled the cost of things, but we all still get paid the same. And if you have kids my age or out trying to buy houses, this is a real deal. It was tough for me to buy a house, but I did it when I was like 25, and it didn't kill us, and I made about $400 a month, and I bought a house. Try doing that today, making $3,000 a month. That won't even pay your mortgage payment. It's nuts and weird. Anyway, and I'm telling you, you're going to have to trust me for now and go study it. That is the result of civil rights versus natural rights. Because we've allowed government to turn property, money, into a civil right that they manage and control with the power elites gaining all the profit. And we just walk around thinking we're better than the rest of the world because we have cable television streaming Netflix and McDonald's. Sorry, I get a little angry. Other questions? How far am I?
You got about 5, 7
minutes. Oh, 5 minutes. So. Your last chance. If you want, I'll share how AI is helping with teaching. So, I don't know if you're aware of what BYU Idaho is doing with Pathway Worldwide, but when I came to BYU Idaho from Florida, I was hired to help with the online initiative. We were putting campus classes online with the idea that we would then turn it into online degrees and go worldwide. We were hoping to go worldwide. That wasn't authorized. Eventually, they authorized it, and we ended up doing all this stuff all over the world, and it's awesome if you want to study it. It's cool. But I didn't have to move to Salt Lake with the rest of them. I got to stay at BYU Idaho. And our job is to basically connect Pathway Worldwide with the professors and the departments at BYU Idaho on campus, because they offer the programs, and Pathway just models it and sends them out. So we were going to, there was an experiment authorized, which is just starting, which was to try to go away from only doing English and have all the classes translated into another language. And they picked Portuguese, which is launching right now. And we started looking for ways to translate all this stuff. And we hired companies, and they gave us pictures, and this one company's like, we use AI, and that helps us get started, and then we put humans on it, and it's awesome, and we're cheaper, and so we had them do a lot of it. And then one of our guys in office is just sitting there with AI, and he's like, this one ChatGPT was pretty young. And he's like, what if I just gave them all my materials and said, turn this into Portuguese? And he did it, and it took 3 seconds, and cost 5 cents, and it was better than what we were getting from the translating college. So that's kind of, we're still like sitting there going, what just happened? And that was a year ago. And AI is way better now, and will be tons better in a year.
Have you heard about how much water it uses?
Oh, I'm sure it uses boatloads of water and power.
I think they used like the whole world's bottled water supply in 1 year.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. That's why they're starting to talk about electricity from space and stuff. Nuclear reactors are all of a sudden the big thing again. It's good for us if we do. Great. But and this isn't anything from UI, this is me, just as an educator. I believe that very soon you will have a bank of content, and you will have whatever language you want linked to that bank of content. And when you change one thing here, it will change instantaneously in every language version of that course. And the technology exists for that, it's just the structure isn't there yet. But if you talk about cost effectiveness and spreading education throughout the world, AI, like what computers did for genealogical work, AI will do even more for education. But you can't go around telling yourself that AI is smart. It is not. It's just information organized. And the people with intelligence will be using AI to do things, be they good or bad. And that's the future. So that and robots and spaceships fly over the universe. It's kind of cool. First time I watched a rocket land. Well, I'm an old man now, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I'm looking around at everybody else, and I'm like, why aren't your eyes wide open going? It changed the whole universe. That one, because I thought it was a pipe dream until it actually happened. And then this skyscraper takes off, and the big trunk of it comes lumbering out of the sky and gets caught by another skyscraper with chopstick arms. We live in that time. It's amazing. This is crazy stuff. All right. I'll stick around for a little bit. My son's going to the Lego robotics competition, so we got to head out.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be up here if you want to chat. Thank you for your time. Good luck. Keep at it.
Thank you.
That was Steve Adams with Natural Rights and the Declaration of Independence.